Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Facebook wants to make ads look better. Vine reaches 48 million users. And Prince is going crazy on Twitter. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 125, recorded Friday, August 23rd, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs/socialhour to receive a free Power Pack upgrade valued at $99. And buy social media solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with social media solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour today at sap.com/twit. And by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription. Tonks sources their beans directly from the growers. They're roasted and shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/socialhour. That's tonks.org/socialhour. Hello, welcome to another fun-filled edition of The Social Hour. Feels like it's been forever since Amber and I connected via Skype. From Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I'm back in Toronto after a great time away on Prince Edward Island. I was also just south of Calgary on the southern border of Alberta. And yeah, it seems like forever, Sarah. I feel like last time we connected, although I'm not sure this was a time, you were getting a couch at your house.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
That was a time before.
That was a few weeks ago now. I love my new couch. It is... I wish I had a picture to show you guys. It's basically a bed that was marketed as a couch, and I bought it. So I have a bed in my bedroom, but I pretty much have also a bed in my living room, and that's the way I like it. So
that's cool.
If I ever invited you over and you wanted to sit on my couch, you would think it was comfortable, but you'd feel compelled to lay down. You kind of almost can't sit on it because it's so deep. It's very bed-like.
Yeah, it sounds comfy.
It's good for laying and watching movies for hours at a time.
So. Did you find that on Pinterest?
I sort of, yeah. I actually kind of did. I had found a sofa Pinterest page with a variety of choices, and this one happened to be from a store called Crate & Barrel. And so I thought, oh, I love the look of that. And I went and I tried out one at the store, and I liked it, so I bought it. Pinterest saves the day. So.
Very cool.
Lots of social media research happening on my couch these days. So it's yes. we're all connected somehow.
I have to see a picture of it at some point for sure.
Absolutely.
Now we have lots of news. This is kind of an interesting piece of news. It just came out in the past day or so that Facebook is going to be providing free photos to businesses that want to use their photos within their advertisements on their site. So if you want to do Facebook ads, you're a small business, you have the option to go through what will be an archive of images that they'll provide for you. So I think this is kind of cool. I mean, I think it gives incentive for businesses who maybe can't afford to get their own professional photos taken.
Yeah, that and just making the ads look better overall. I don't think I can really imagine any ad on Facebook from memory right now where I think, boy, did that look good. Yeah, you know, a lot of times it's just kind of, it's sort of like janky stuff that happens over in the right-hand rail or something. I think it makes perfect sense. If Facebook wants us to take ads seriously, they should look a little bit more professional, and they can certainly afford it. Having some sort of a stock photography agreement with whatever company that they allow advertisers to tap into just means that more advertisers will want to participate, and that's a good thing for Facebook.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I know I had tweeted out this story earlier on today, and there were a couple people who tweeted back who thought what I was saying and what was being said in this article was that Facebook was going to allow small businesses to use your photos within their ads. So just want to clarify that that is not the case, at least with this particular piece of news. But I think this is one of those things coming out of Facebook on the advertising front that it makes a ton of sense to me. And I think there's a lot of businesses who would definitely jump on board, and they'll be able to have access, it looks like, to millions of beautiful professional photos and not have to worry about paying a cent for access to those images. So a great thing, and some good news coming out of Facebook, because sometimes we beat up on Facebook
and sometimes Facebook deserves it. But today is not one of those days. By the way, Facebook made some changes to the mobile version of their service that makes it a little bit easier for you to, if you were going to use Facebook as a credential to log into a third-party site or service, to it doesn't really change the way that it works, but apparently Facebook feels that it's had enough confusion from users who wonder, well, why is that app now posting on my Facebook wall? I didn't give it permission, that sort of thing, that it's trying to make that language a little bit easier to understand. So you understand, yes, I would like my friends to see updates from this music service that I'm connecting to, and so on. So that's also a good thing.
Yeah, that's also a great thing. And I know I don't know what their stock price was at the end of today, but I know it had gone up a little bit earlier today when I was checking in with a friend of mine. So, you know, it's good to see some stuff that really is great for end users on Facebook. And I think those are two pieces of news that will really make people happy.
Absolutely. You know what also may make you happy if you're an Android smartphone user is the service Nextdoor. We've talked about Nextdoor in the past. What I love about Nextdoor is there's a website as well, but it's great as a mobile service. And it allows me, in my particular neighborhood, I live in San Francisco, to connect to people who actually live down, you know, next door to me, or down the street, or on my block, or in my little microcosm of a world. And the way that it does this is it verifies your actual address, and you get like a postcard mailed to your mailbox, and then you have a little code. And so it's basically like, do you actually live at this address? Okay, then I can legitimately say that Christy Jones lives three doors down from you, and maybe the two of you can get to know each other and, you know, share recipes or whatever. And it's a great service, but it was never available on Android. It is now. And I think that it depends on where you live. There are certain neighborhoods that seem to be doing better than others. In the past, we've talked about this on Tech News Today. And Jason Howell, who lives here in Petaluma, Petaluma's by any cases a pretty small town. Jason says he's got a great, thriving Nextdoor community in his neighborhood. So it's not just for cities. It just depends on how many people want to be a part of the neighborhood. But especially if you've got kids or pets or there's, you know, neighborhood watch for potential crime, all that stuff can be really, really helpful when you actually know your neighbors. So all the millions of Android users who couldn't tap into this fun stuff, at least on the mobile version, now you can.
Hey, Sarah, just out of curiosity, how do you maintain privacy within this app?
Well, so once you say, all right, I want to be part of Nextdoor, I live in, I live in the South of Market neighborhood of San Francisco. So I say, okay, I live in the South of Market neighborhood. And Nextdoor then basically needs me to verify that I actually live there. So once I do that, I become part of this community. And at that point, I can either say I live in the neighborhood, or I can say I live on this street, or, and I've seen this before, I can say I live at 100 First Street, number 15, apartment 15, you know, that sort of thing. And people can set the type of privacy that they're comfortable with. You know, some people say, I don't know, I don't care. You can know exactly where I live and walk up to my front door. I don't really feel that way. Then again, I live in an apartment building, so it would be hard for someone to get in anyway. So there are different tiers of letting people know exactly where you are. But I've seen posts in my previous neighborhood that I no longer live in, but I was part of that neighborhood for a while, where, you know, somebody had a break-in, and they explained exactly where they lived and exactly how the thief apparently got in a particular window. And the whole idea was to basically blast out to other people, if you have an apartment like mine, you know, with a garage and the window and that sort of thing, we've got a lot of architecture that's similar in that neighborhood, please, please be aware. So in that case, I thought, well, it was pretty effective.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, right? Mm-hmm. It's great that you have the option too, as far as privacy, because I wasn't quite sure about that, but I would definitely use something like this in my neighborhood. It sounds awesome. Now, Sarah, I feel badly because I have not used Vine as much as I would have liked to use Vine. You know, I know we've talked about great examples of Vine used well, like the Best Buy example, I believe it was last week or the week before, how they're using it for back to school marketing. Now, interestingly enough, with this report that Vine grows to 40 million registered users. So a massive jump, really.
And you know, this really mimics what happened with Instagram. Vine had, I don't know, something like, I think it was, well, I have to look at the article. I think it was something like 13 million, which when it was still, yeah, okay, 13 million iOS users back in June, which sounds pretty good. Wow, that's a lot of people. Then it opened up to Android, and now we're at 40 million in basically just under two months later. So more than doubled by quite a bit. And that happened, the same thing happened with Instagram, where once Instagram was open to the Android community after several years of not being available to them, a lot of the iOS people mumbled and grumbled that, you know, the floodgates are open and Instagram's going to be different. And I don't really think it is different at all. And their user base went up exponentially. So I guess the moral of the story here is get your app on Android and you'll be happy. Maybe Nextdoor will enjoy the same crazy growth due to the Android community being a part of it. It seems like this is really a trend, especially for some of the really popular apps that maybe became popular and we're all a little bit surprised that they became as popular as they did, because on iOS, it's a little bit of a testing ground. And then, and I'm not saying that iOS should always get an app first, because I know that Android people don't want to hear that. And that's really not what I'm saying. But it seems that there have been specific cases where it's worked really well. Vine got a lot of attention. Somehow it seemed better constrained to only be available to certain people. Now we all kind of know how Vine works, whether or not we really like the service. And now it's a hugely popular app, at least with registered users. Maybe not with daily active users or monthly active users, but as far as registrations go, 40 million is pretty big.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Now, this is an interesting story. I know we've spoken before about Prince on the show, and I happen to love Prince. I absolutely love his music. I've seen him in concert. I actually think we were talking about him in relation to Vine when Vine first launched, because I believe that he was playing a concert, perhaps in Austin, and he requested that some Vine videos that were recorded by his fans were taken down because of copyright infringement.
That's right,
and
yeah.
He's been very anti-internet, right, for so many years. And then all of a sudden, I start seeing stories about him logging onto Twitter to promote his new album. And it's just, you know, he's kind of, maybe he's changing his tune, no pun intended.
Well, Prince is an odd one, isn't he? He seems curmudgeonly when it comes to
yes.
the internet. And it's sort of like we all kind of laugh and go, oh, Prince, because he's just been sort of eccentric about a lot of other things. You know, he changed his name to a symbol for a while. Remember that? Now he's Prince again. And at one point he was going to these Minnesota Vikings games, which is a football team. He's from Minnesota, but that was weird too. And they kept showing him in the luxury box. And he's had sort of this history of just kind of being a little bit off the wall. So
yeah.
I think probably he didn't want to use Twitter as a marketing medium, if I had to guess. And a bunch of people probably sat him down and said, do you know how much attention you would get if you just used this service? Please, let us put together a little cover photo for you and tweet out a couple of times. And he probably ended up agreeing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I'm assuming that this is the official account for Third Eye Girl, which looks like this is his upcoming album. But it's fun to look through the tweets. It looks like there are about 228 tweets so far on that Twitter account. And when you read through them, I don't know. I mean, I think some people assume that it's him actually tweeting. Who knows? But some of it is kind of gibberish. I guess he's using a combination of symbols and letters and uppercase and lowercase, and it seems sort of Prince style. But to me, if you looked at this and didn't know it was Prince, this would be a lesson in how not to tweet.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's a verified Twitter account, so
yeah.
And there aren't that many followers yet, but I think that the numbers will probably be, you know, over a million by the time the weekend's over. But yes, it's weird. A lot of retweeting, which is
yes.
Here's the problem I have, Amber, and this is the reason that when I follow actors or musicians or just celebrities, people that I admire, I usually don't end up following them for very long because they do too much retweeting of people promoting them. So
yes.
There are a lot of tweets in here where it's like, hey, buy Prince's new album. It's awesome. Retweeted by Prince. It's like, well, okay. It's too many of those. And then I just want to turn off retweets and then unfollow in general. I don't know what the solution is, but it's sort of a fine line to walk, even if you're Prince.
It is. I mean, and even if you look at so many tweets that are sent out, they're using all caps, which I think has always been a big no-no on Twitter. It sounds like you're screaming. The mm-hmm. list goes on and on. You know, you have pictures that have been posted like London 1, London 2. I mean, there's not very much description. And it just, like I said, I mean, if there were a list of top 10 things to do right on Twitter and to do well, I think this would break all of them, actually, if you go down to the bottom. So not sure who's doing all of the tweeting, but I think you're right. It's going to reach over a million people pretty quickly. Always frustrates me. I find when people are on Twitter, I don't care if they're a celebrity or not, but when they don't follow anyone, I mean, it seems such a bizarre way. Obviously, it's just a promotional platform, so I'm not going to follow this one. I'm going to close it up, Sarah.
Yeah, yeah. Tit for tat. Then again, on the other side of the spectrum are the people who say, follow me, I follow back. So
yes.
maybe tit for tat isn't exactly how we should all be using Twitter. But yeah, not following anybody that means you're not participating. You're just yelling.
Yeah, pretty much just yelling.
Yeah.
This is a neat story. I didn't know about this. So I know you discovered this searching and putting in our rundown, a neat story about LinkedIn.
Yeah. So LinkedIn wants the kids to be part of LinkedIn. LinkedIn has done a couple of things for the younger set. It's dropped the minimum age to create a profile to 14. That age was actually, there are LinkedIn profiles as young as 13 in certain countries, but in the U.S., it has dropped the minimum age to 14. So if you're in high school and you're interested in putting together, maybe you already have some work experience and connecting with colleagues and people that you may work with in the future, you can do so legally. And also, it has launched LinkedIn University pages. So these are pages as a way for high school students to interact with university administration and staff of colleges that they would really like to go to. So that's really, really helpful if you are a forward-thinking child. And that's, I don't know, I perused a few of the university pages earlier, and I think that a lot of this, Amber, this is not a bad thing. I don't think that children should not be able to kind of start networking early on. But a lot of this seems to be a well-crafted way to just get more people using the site early on so that as adults, they use it later. As it stands now, I think most people don't think about LinkedIn until they've graduated or for whatever reason they've decided, oh, I need to work full time and I need to network and this is a site for me. That usually happens, I don't know, somewhere after the age of 18. So if they could get a jump start on it, that's good for LinkedIn.
Yeah, I think it's good. And I also think it's kind of neat to be able to teach young people about proper usage as far as social media in the sense that LinkedIn is a pretty squeaky clean community. And we know that there are so many teenagers who use Facebook and they don't think about the implications of their professional life later on. So it's neat to be able to see LinkedIn go this route in some ways, because if you are a teenager, maybe in your mid to late teens, and you want to think about really having a great profile online, someplace where you can go and kind of promote what you want to do or getting into school, whatever it might be, it's nice for them, I think, to have this option and to see that there are social networks beyond just Snapchat and Facebook and some of those others.
Yeah, absolutely. For anybody who's like, hey, I'm 14 and I can't get in, this will go into effect on September 12th. And the minimum age currently, at least in the U.S., is 18. It will become 14 at that point. So you can network to your heart's desire. And I think a lot of younger folks, smart ones, want to feel like they have access to the same tools that adults do. So I think for people who take this stuff seriously, LinkedIn is probably on the right track here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good move on their part. And I'm not sure they're going to have a massive amount of traffic right off with that age group. But I think it's something that it's nice that they've opened it up. And I think in some cases, it will make sense for teens to be part of it.
Absolutely. Quick reminder before we go on that we record the Social Hour live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Thanks to everybody who is joining us live right now. But of course, really, most of the people that watch and listen to our show watch and listen on demand. twit.tv/TSH is where you can catch up with all of the episodes you may have missed. Handy subscription links there as well to make sure you subscribe to the audio or if you so desire, the video or if you so desire the audio version of the show. Amber and I do a lot of visual walkthroughs of sites and services. But hey, if you're commuting or you're on a walk or for whatever reason you can't watch, we hope that you'll listen. And thanks to everybody who joins us each week for our show. All right, before we get into our social tip and a couple of spotlights, let's take a moment to thank 99 Designs for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. If you haven't heard of 99 Designs, we talk about it a lot here on the Twit Network. It's great for people like me who don't really know the first thing about graphic design, but I really have some great ideas and I'd like to put together something that's really, really professional. Let's say maybe I've got a great mobile app idea, or I'd like to put a freelance business card together that would really wow somebody if I exchanged it with them at a dinner party or a logo or any kind of graphic design. You can find the right designer for your project at 99 Designs. You just tell the company what you're looking for, and then dozens of designers get to submit designs created just for you. Then you give them your feedback, say, well, I like this. This is great. This is exactly what I'm looking for. Maybe I want the colors changed, that sort of thing. They refine their designs, and then you select and pay for the design you like the most. So let's go on the social media tip. If you want a Facebook, a Twitter, or another social media design, 99 Designs can help. In fact, if you go to 99designs.com/social-media-page-design, don't worry if you go to 99designs/social hour, you can get there too. You get to see quite a few examples of what other people have used 99 Designs for and really put together some great social media pages. Amber, I've always meant to do this on my own.
It's awesome.
Twitter background, and this is, it's kind of like I never get around to it because I don't really know what I'm doing.
Or you want to change it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's also another issue is you constantly maybe want to change your Twitter background. This happens to me all the time. Maybe you have a new business that you're promoting or some type of campaign you're involved in if you're running a small business. And it's such a great idea to be able to come to a service like this and just get a Twitter background or Facebook page cover. There are just so many options. So it's great. I'm going to send a ton of people here because I know people ask me this all the time.
Yeah, there are a lot of services they'll put together something that's a little bit boilerplate. I see that on Twitter backgrounds all the time. The nice thing about 99 Designs is you get something that's custom that nobody else has, and that's going to make you stand out. And I know for all of us working in social media, that can be hard to do. So if you're interested, visit 99designs.com/social hour, and you can get a $99 power pack of services for free. Yeah, basically $0 rather than 99. Power pack gives you more designer time, more attention, so your project's going to look that much better. 99 Designs will feature your project in their marketplace, so you get more designers interested, and it's great. It's absolutely great. Social media folks, visit 99designs.com/social hour, and we thank them for their support of our show. All right, let's move on to our social tip of the week.
Yeah, this is a fun one. So I know people are using hashtags all the time on Twitter, of course, on Facebook as well now. But sometimes I think people struggle, Sarah, in terms of what they should use as a hashtag. You know, many times the hashtags don't make sense for events because someone's promoting an event and the hashtag's just way too long. What I love about this is it's an article that was posted on Twitter's blog that talks about how to choose a hashtag and has tips for choosing a hashtag. There's an infographic, in fact, at the bottom of the page that takes you on a step-by-step tutorial of sorts that will tell you what type of hashtag you should be creating and help you figure out in terms of the way you may use that hashtag. Because obviously, if you create a hashtag, it's very different if you're having just a one-off event versus promoting maybe a product or whatever it might be. So this is kind of neat because I know it may seem simple to us, but I know a lot of people can't figure out what hashtags are, let alone a great strategy for using them.
I think too, especially on Twitter, and this is just going to happen more on Facebook as well, but there are helpful hashtags that help people follow a particular topic. And then there are sort of funny slash ironic hashtags. And yeah. I know the difference between the two because I spend my life on Twitter. But I think that does sort of drive people away because
it does, yeah.
It's difficult and you don't want to be that person who's like, I don't get it. So it seems like the syntax that's very foreign and alien, and it just simply doesn't need to be that way. And hashtags can be really helpful. In fact, Amber, you and I yesterday were talking a little bit more about how we should probably use the social hour as a hashtag on this show more because it can be taken seriously and be a really good tool.
Yeah, exactly. So that's official then, Sarah, right? We're going to just say social hour is our hashtag.
Yes, social hour is our hashtag, even though the show is called The Social Hour. You guys understand.
We don't need that.
You know, it's funny, just as a little side note, speaking of hashtags, there are always funny Twitter accounts, you know, parody accounts that pop up. It seems like there's a new one every day. And the site Medium, which allows people to basically publish posts, it's sort of, I guess you could call it a blogging platform, has been in the news lately for posting some, I don't know, I guess people have written some stuff on Medium that have been controversial for whatever reason. So a parody account called False Medium popped up today. There's, yeah, I don't know, like 15 or so funny posts. But it's funny because the tech community, of course, jumps on it like, this is really funny because it's basically the whole point of the account is parody headlines that don't actually exist. And so now, at least in my friend group, half of my friends are now posting their own headlines, hashtag false medium. So
hilarious.
So it's a funny thing, but it's meant to be. It kind of works. You know, this is sort of how some of the stuff gets steamrolled. Whoever has this page, I don't know who it is, could then search the hashtag false medium and never really have to come up with a witty headline again because everyone is already contributing.
That's hilarious. You know, it's funny, Sarah. I was just watching the Twitter feed, and speaking of hashtags, Rob, who's at SpaceGuy1 on Twitter, says when people tweet entirely with hashtags, which can be annoying, I call that hash spam, and he used the hashtag for hash spam. It's very meta. So I wanted to include that during our conversation because
that drives me crazy.
It's
Amber.
True,
and I really do think it's just a little bit of a let's all get on the same page about what a hashtag is for. You shouldn't hashtag your sentence. That doesn't actually work.
What about when people use it verbally in real life, Sarah? How do you feel about that when they're saying, you know, this is such a beautiful day, hashtag awesome? If someone says that to you, what's your reaction?
Nobody's said that to you.
I have heard people say that, yes.
Really?
I have heard people say hashtag verbally in real life to describe a situation.
And they weren't trying to be winky winky funny?
I think they're trying to be funny, but also in the know as far as, you know, it's kind
right.
of an inside
yes.
group.
Yeah.
But
this is our lingo.
I think you should avoid that. If I were going to give a social media tip, I think you should avoid that. Unless you're with a group of people where it is pretty tongue-in-cheek and you're just trying to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you're trying to be funny, that's one thing. If you're actually like, hey, Amber, after the show, I'm going to have so much fun tonight, hashtag TGIF. I want you to punch me in the face.
You do such a good job of it, though, Sarah. It's too funny.
It's the worst.
You're going to start doing it. You're going to have a few drinks of wine over the weekend and you're going to start doing it. And then you're going to totally blame me, aren't you?
Yes, it's true. I'm going to throw you under the bus in a big way.
Oh,
hashtag
no.
Blame Amber.
Exactly. All right. So for our spotlight today, Sarah, I mentioned I was in just south of Calgary last weekend speaking at a conference. It was an education conference. It was a great event. And there were a bunch of education and professionals in the room. And towards the end of my Q&A, someone raised their hand and they had asked a bunch of interesting questions about social media. This woman asked me about Ask.fm because her daughter was using it. And I had heard about Ask.fm in, online and headlines recently, but I didn't know too much about it. So I thought for our spotlight, maybe we could dive into it for people who are wondering what it's all about, because it is definitely raising some eyebrows, particularly around cyberbullying and some recent events where there have been some suicides loosely attached to the service. And I think just to explain to people what it is and how it works.
So is Ask.fm sort of like the new FormSpring, where you could be on the service and I could ask you a question anonymously, and maybe it would be a legitimate question, and maybe it would be a question that I wouldn't ask you to your face, that sort of thing. So these always seem very, they seem to be, it sort of skews popular with young people because young people love kind of answering, it's almost like truth or dare type stuff.
It is. It's a lot like that. And, I saw reports recently saying that they have about 65 million users right now on Ask.fm. The number has just soared in the past few months and definitely surpassing FormSpring. Now, the thing is, I think it is that anonymity that people should worry a little bit about, particularly parents when their kids are using it, because it does open up, the opportunity for cyberbullying in a pretty intense way. And I think we always try to be fair and balanced on the Social Hour, but this is one of those services as far as talking about the benefits of using something like this that I think parents need to be aware of, and any teens watching the show, I mean, if they have a different opinion, we would love to know, but it just seems like it's one of those services that I can't think of that many benefits, and it just seems to be mired in just really bad news lately.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with the idea that you could be piled on anonymously by bullies. And in anything that's, you also have cases on Facebook, say, of bullies and a case of suicide where somebody could point to bullying that happened on social media. So I know that the site itself isn't the problem, it's the bullies. However, anonymity is not, in many cases, it's just not the answer. So many blogs, so many sites now have required people to log in if they're going to even be part of the comment section, or have taken away comments altogether because anonymous comments just don't add to the conversation. In fact, the Huffington Post recently announced that they would be getting rid of anonymous commenting because it would make comments spiral out of control, and then there are insults, and it's not conducive to a healthy conversation. But this seems worse. And, this was actually why I got driven away from FormSpring back in the day. In fact, you and I think it was still in the Net at Night days, had one of the founders of FormSpring on the show. And FormSpring was kind of hot, and a lot of people had accounts. And I sort of liked the idea of people being able to ask me anything. And it ended up being something that I just stopped logging in because I only got inappropriate questions from people who are obviously just trying to get a rise out of me or some sort of reaction. It's like, who needs it? Who needs that kind of thing in their life? But maybe the younger you are and a little bit more impressionable, that can end up being something that you don't shrug off, and it's dangerous, and it puts really bad thoughts into your head.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be so hurtful, right? You go on there and you think maybe this is just a fun, innocent site, your friends are using it, and then all of a sudden you start getting asked really inappropriate questions by people who are obviously hiding in the digital world and not really coming forward with who they actually are. And it just, I don't know. It's bound to be in the headlines in the next few months as the numbers continue to grow. But I'd be really curious if there's anyone who is watching the Social Hour right now who uses it or knows someone who uses it and has any other advice for us, because I really haven't been in there kind of floating around the community. It's just not the place that I think I would necessarily hang out. And I would love to get some more feedback on it if any of our listeners use it on a regular basis, because I think for parents, I've been asked this a lot, even in the past weeks since that woman asked me. I've had a couple of questions about Ask.fm. So definitely one to watch and keep an eye on it and just be more aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if we need something that's a little bit better news, a little bit lighter note, you might be excited to hear that Twitter triggers have returned to It's This Then That. Yay! If This Then That, of course, if you're not familiar, need a refresher, it's sometimes known as IFTTT, and this is a way to hook up two services together to make them have actions that work well. Now, what's interesting about this whole Twitter If This Then That relationship is that just about a year ago, Twitter had changed their API and it negatively affected a lot of third-party apps. Well, it didn't necessarily negatively affect Ift, but Ift said, you know what, we're just going to take down all of our Twitter triggers because we want to be proactive about it rather than having the service kind of break on us. Well, the two companies have come to a better understanding of each other. And what's great is that if you go to ifttt.com/Twitter, you can see now that there are a variety of, they call them little recipes, that you can use that kind of make your lives better. For example, would you like all of your tweets in a Google spreadsheet? Some people might want, you know, you kind of like that archive functionality, right? If you want to have your Twitter profile picture update every time you update your Facebook profile picture, probably something that I should do. Both of my profile pictures are out of date and might as well just do it once. Or Last.fm loved track, send that to Twitter. Maybe app.net post sent to Twitter as well. Save links from your favorite tweets to Pocket. The list goes on. I mean, there are quite a few of these recipes. You can also make your own. But the point is that Twitter now is one of the components of services that can be grouped together using If This Then That. And it's a really great service. It's a lot of fun to use. I send all of my Instagram photos as a backup to Dropbox, for example. And every time I check in somewhere on Foursquare, I have that check-in with the timestamp added to my Google Calendar so that I can go back.
Yeah, it's
just for me. But it's kind of fun. Like, oh yeah, I was there at 12:37 on Monday. That's right. I checked in at that coffee shop. Cool. So it's a little bit of a kind of a calendar paper trail. It's a lot of fun. So that's some good news in the social sphere this week. All right, let's move on. We have some viewer feedback, quite a bit of it, especially because Amber and I had taped our last show a little early in advance, so we've had some time to bank some emails. But before we do, let's thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Social Media Solutions from SAP is an amazing service that really, really applies to so many of you who watch and listen and help us put our show together each week because it helps companies that use social media improve customer service. Who doesn't want to do that? If you're in the business, obviously that is the number one thing that you need to do. And this is just a great tool because it takes a lot of the work out of your hands. It kind of puts it into the hands of big data. People may be commenting about your company. You want to know that they said that, but it's hard to sort of blanket watch everyone's blog, all the tweets and hashtags and, oh, what should I be following? And this person is upset and I should probably reach out to them. And it can be very overwhelming, especially if your brand is on the rise. So there are two components of social media solutions, the listening component and the engaging component. Of course, the listening component is all about taking in information that people are putting out there about your company. Good stuff, bad stuff, all that stuff. The engaging component is where you provide feedback. If somebody has a tech support question, you've got the answer. Or the person on your team gets that question routed to them automatically, and they can provide the answer. Maybe you're the person who just kind of calms somebody down if they had a bad support experience. All of that stuff is part of the engaging component, and that's how you turn a bad experience into a good one. Or you turn somebody who's just not sure if they want to buy your product into somebody that went ahead and happily bought your product. So those are some of the things that Social Media Solutions does very, very well. In fact, if you're in the marketing space for Social Media Solutions, you should check out sap.com/twit because this tool gives you more than marketing. It's marketing plus. It improves the customer service and the support experience. They've got a great guided tour over at sap.com/twit. It gives you a little bit more of an idea of how you can use social media solutions from SAP for your company. I know Amber and I are, this is sort of our at least part-time job. I would say it's almost like my three-quarter time job is maybe just monitoring what everyone is talking about that relates to us and what we do for a living on our show. So I know we're not alone here.
Yeah, it's a ton of work. I mean, especially if you're monitoring any type of business or brand or even an industry. I mean, it becomes such a big job. I know managing my own accounts is already taking a ton of time. So if you need to do something bigger than that, obviously you're going to need some help to be able to monitor and manage. And I think, Sarah, too, people's expectation these days is that they have a response really quickly. So you need a good way to streamline all of the messages coming through. And it's not easy to do without a really good software program.
Absolutely. SAP, we thank you for supporting the Social Hour, social media solutions from SAP at sap.com/twit. All right. Well, we're kind of getting back into a little bit of, it's not really a positive email, but it's a question that I think we can all help out with. This one comes from Kent. He says, I've been looking for a chance to get a job in social media. He says, hopefully local. So maybe that's maybe a local business. For almost 4 years since I lost my last full-time job. He says, at the time, I tried networking with local social media types, and he kept hearing, I need a business degree or a communications degree. He says, I don't have either of those, and I can't afford to get one now. And I'm afraid that even entry-level jobs in the next few years will only go to those young, recent college grads. He says he has an anthropology degree. He's 40 years old. He feels like maybe he missed the boat. He says it also appears that some people are telling local companies to only hire people with social media certificates from one of those local schools. He says, are my problems just my issue, or is this a wider issue, finding a job in social media?
It's interesting. You know, Sarah, I have a small company called Connect, and we're looking for a social media communications manager right now. And we had a resume come in from this woman probably about 3 or 4 days ago, and it was one of the best that we've received. And what I loved about it is that her resume looked almost like a website, like a social media website. It had all of her links. It was just very icon friendly, kind of like you would see like the Twitter icon and the Facebook icon. And she just put such a great foot forward as far as representing how she could help in social just by the design of her resume. But another thing she did is that she's active on all these social media sites. So to be honest with you, at the end of the day, I cared way less if she had any type of formal degree. I cared way more that she was using these tools and I could look at the account. So my advice for Kent would be that you should get on there and be using them. You don't have to have massive followings, but have them all looking great. And really, you know, it's if you can do a course at your community college, that's a great idea. But at the end of the day, you really need to be able to showcase that you're using these tools and you know how to use them and that your accounts look good and look professional and you're a thought leader in this space.
Yeah, I know that a lot of this advice can seem sort of vague and broad, but I agree with Amber. I think it's not that education isn't important, but I know a lot of very successful people. I mean, I can name a lot of them if we had the time that don't even have college degrees. It's not that they're not bright and smart. And of course, college degrees, I have one and yeah, I'm proud of it and everything. But I don't think that if you have a degree in something that's not social media related, it should hold you back at all. I also think that the age thing is a difficult one, especially because you hear so much about people who are not a 20-something feeling like they can't compete with a young programmer or somebody in the social media space. But then again, the conversation that we had about, you know, being able to properly use a hashtag, what if you were to say to a company, you know what, I can really, really help your engagement. I can drive traffic to your site. Give me a week. Let me take over your Twitter account or something. Give me a little bit of a window and I can show you actual metrics that I know what I'm doing. And there's a good chance that maybe, you know, Kent keeps mentioning local businesses. There's a good chance that the local business probably doesn't know how to do that already and can use somebody like you. So there's a little bit of investment on your part, but that might be a great way to just show that you know what you're doing and it doesn't really matter so much what you used to do.
Yeah, it may mean that all of a sudden you're starting to volunteer your time to manage social media accounts for a local nonprofit, for example, or an event that's happening. just get your name out there. I have a really good friend who has an awesome job in social media, and it took her a long time to get that job because she didn't have any formal training. But what she did is she found a cause that she really cared about, and she got super active in this cause, which was Movember, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. And she made a name for herself just by supporting this cause, and she was like one of the number one people who were tweeting and Facebooking about it. And that's how she established herself as a social media person. So I think that's a really great piece of advice. If you can work with someone locally who maybe needs help, and then try to, you know, prove that you've had some success already using some of these tools. It's a lot of work though, right, Sarah? I mean, that's the thing, is I wish there were an easy answer, but I feel like, you know, it means after he's putting, you know, his, I think he mentions he has a daughter, after you put your kids or kid to bed, that you may be up tweeting and Facebooking and really trying to stay on top of all this stuff, because it's a bit of a rat race out there.
Yeah. And I know that there are a lot of people saying, but I spend all of my time on social media and I'm still not going to be seen as anybody as some, you know, huge following person or somebody who's, you know, thought of as like a social media expert. And it's sort of all an illusion, right? I mean, I'm not no more of an expert than the next person. I just find it also interesting that I spend a lot of time using these tools, and we have a show about it, and you know, this is all very enjoyable for us, and we're lucky to do it. But there is no shortcut. You kind of have to live it. And if you can convince somebody that you're living it and you can help their business, then that's really all they care about. Nobody's going to pay you for having a degree. They want to pay you for making their Twitter account effective.
Yeah. So I think obviously for Kent, I mean, listening to the show and figuring out what's trendy and important in the social media space is obviously a good start too. So hopefully some helpful advice there. We also got an email from, is it McPhil, Sarah, from the chat room?
Yeah, I think McPhil. I think that's how she pronounces it.
Okay, so
hi,
he says,
if you're
hi there. Yeah, let us know how you pronounce this. She says, or he says, just putting my two cents in about Kimi. It's difficult enough to get keys made correctly. They don't always come out right. When you get one made, you have to take it to whatever lock it's supposed to open and test. This is all based on us talking about the Kimi service. I think it was last week or the week before, mm-hmm. where you could store your duplicate key design, I believe, in the cloud. That's kind of the premise of it. She goes on to write, Kimi just adds another variable to the equation, your camera. So factors such as, one, whether you're able to take the picture exactly right, which is obviously difficult to do, or two, the quality of your phone's camera can affect the accuracy of the key. So you take the picture, place the order, wait days to receive the key, and it may or may not work, which is a good point, and goes on to say, that's not acceptable to me, so I'd never use this service. And says, I agree with the chat room that more keyless options are where the focus should be. Kimi is a non-starter as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I feel like, and for anybody who didn't watch the episode where we talked about Kimi, I think it was about two or three episodes ago, and the whole idea is that you can take a photo of a key and basically have the information to give to either a friend or a locksmith of some kind to get a key made remotely based on information that you have in your smartphone. Okay, that sounds fine, but McPhil does bring up some good points. Is that picture dark? Or if you're really in a jam, and usually when you need a key made, it's somewhat of an emergency. You're locked out of your house, or you need to get into somebody, you know, friend's house, and I don't know, feed their cat or whatever it might be. So it's almost like it's a solution to a problem, and we're not sure if the solution matches the, you know, it's not sort of a daily problem. It's a, maybe if you're lucky, it's never a service that you want to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of with McPhil here. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think a keyless option probably makes the most sense. And that we've talked before, like you mentioned, about security issues and all those other things. So thanks for sharing your feedback. Definitely helpful. Now, Sarah, I don't know if we talked about this next article that Mike sent in, but it's a really interesting one. And if you want to read what Mike said in his email, we can take a look at the article.
Yeah. So Mike said, I ran across this. I was wondering what your thoughts were. He points us to an article he sent us from the Next Web, but this is about a new Google service called Helpouts. Now, I can't remember, Amber, if we talked about it on this show or not, but this was something that was rumored to be happening, about a month ago, and it is indeed a real thing. Google is currently testing a service called Helpouts And what it would do is pretty much use the Google Hangout protocol to allow me to say, I am going to walk you through the art of key making, for example, using some sort of a video, almost like a lesson. And you might say, well, I'm interested in learning about that, so I will pay Sarah X amount of dollars, something that has been predetermined by me, to be the expert. So it's a little bit of like an online classroom for a variety of people who might have skills in something and feel like there might be enough people who would like to learn those skills. And you don't have an opportunity to all be in the same room. So it's kind of a remote learning thing brought to you by Google. And apparently the whole thing, you need a Google Plus account to participate. Not a big surprise. This is Google after all. And then payment would all happen via Google Wallet, which is also would further that whole services thing. So it's all very much a Google experience, but in general, I'm pretty excited to see what's going to come out of it. You know, remote yoga classes or cooking classes. That's something that I would pay for if the pricing was reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, even courses. You know, if you think back to our recent email just about getting more training in social media, imagine if you could do a course that was in, you know, this format where you could charge for it. I think that becomes pretty interesting. I mean, it talks about real help from real people in real time, but I'm hoping that it could be a group of people. There's very little information on the website, but I love this idea. I mean, any way that you can share information and be able to help people along the way. And of course, with Google Plus Hangouts, the technology is fabulous. So this sounds really interesting. I might just have to request an invitation code right now.
There you go. Google Helpouts. Yeah, I can't wait to take my first little course or maybe my first course. I don't know what I could teach.
Sarah, we could teach a social media class.
We could.
That's good.
I mean, I sort of hope that this is thought of a little bit as one. Well, I mean, it's a little bit of how to. We could do like a social hour branch off Google help out class. You know, maybe we could tackle hashtags for a day, for example.
Exactly. Maybe for professionals, people who do this for a living, right?
That'd actually be really fun.
All right. Okay. Speaking of fun, I'm sure you've heard the news about Ben Affleck and his role as Batman. Well, I don't really normally feel badly for celebrities, but as I watch Twitter and other things like our meme of the week, which is Ben Affleck Batman memes, and I think you have even a better, what did you use here? Did you call it Batfleck or something?
Yeah, I made that up. I don't know if I'm the only one. Probably not.
I love it.
But I thought, why not just call him Batfleck until the movie comes out and... Gosh. Have a little fun with it. Why?
Yes.
Now, people went crazy. And I would say, in general, not in a good way.
Not in a good way. Yeah, they were upset. I mean, if you look on the Mashable article, any of the pictures that you're looking at right now, you know, people have him portrayed as Batman. Of course, he has, in a couple of instances, he has Matt Damon beside him and Matt Damon being Robin in silly little animated GIFs. But there are a bunch of funny little memes people have created. I know there's one here at the end where the people from Marvel Comics, I believe, when they find out that he'll be playing Batman, they're sitting at their desk laughing their heads off and really just poking fun at him as the choice for Batman. I don't think it fits. I didn't think, oh, wow, he's the perfect Batman, right? I just didn't think people would feel this strongly about it. But it's very controversial, I suppose.
Well, once you got Grumpy Cat Wayne in, you know it's a real meme for sure.
It's a real meme, yeah.
So I don't actually, and I'm sure that anybody who follows a little bit more of the Batman franchise could tell me why Christian Bale he's just maybe done. He's had enough Batman movies or something. He's done quite well. I loved him as Batman.
Me too.
But we all need a reboot. Batman has had quite a few different Batmans. George Clooney is everybody's favorite actor, and nobody really liked him as Batman very much. So there are definitely, it's not as if you can point to Ben as being the only actor who might not do well, but I really like Ben Affleck. I know that he has had some stinkers of movies, but his movie Argo also won Best Picture at the last Oscars. So
Yeah. But maybe, you know, it was a fabulous movie. I definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But maybe it is just, if you look at the string of the movies that he's done, you know, he's done some more serious movies, some more dramatic films. So to see him play a character like Batman, it seems kind of a strange fit. But
Oh, audio listeners, you are really missing out. Yes. On our meme of the week, we've got a portly Val Kilmer saying, "Hey, remember when I was Batman? I had forgotten, actually, Val. Thank you for reminding me. And thank you, chat room, for also reminding me that not everybody thinks George Clooney is the best actor ever. I did not mean to speak for all of us, just for myself and many, many other people on Earth. But not everyone. Don't want to generalize. Amber, I think that Ben Affleck is as capable as anybody I can think of.
He's a believer.
He's a handsome guy. He's probably going to look great in a bat suit. And you know, maybe he'll whisper less than the last Batman did, and that would be okay with me too. And I can't wait to see. And I don't think Matt Damon is going to be Robin, nor does he want to be.
No, that's just weird. I hope that never happens. Except for in this meme, which is awesome. And I just saw Casey McKinnon, who I know you know too, Sarah, and I absolutely love her. She just shared this on Google+, and it's a great meme of Ben Affleck and Matt Damon running as Batman and Robin. They look very cute.
They do. They do. I mean, when you put it that way, maybe I'm like, hey, Matt Damon, what are you up to? You guys should, you know, rule the world again. Well, all right. Moving on. Thanks to everybody, always, as always, for contributing to our show, sending us emails and responses and tweeting ideas and stories and feedback for us. We love you guys. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. Hopefully that's easy to remember. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626social. And our official hashtag for the show going forward is #socialhour. So anytime you want to speak to us or provide some fodder for our program, future program, please do #socialhour. And Amber and I promise to be regularly looking for tweets that have that hashtag attached for future episodes. All right, before we get into Amber's rad or fad, this has been a jam-packed show and we're not even done yet.
I know.
Let's take a moment to talk about coffee, because coffee is the most wonderful little drug the world has ever known.
In fact, I just had some in my mug, Sarah, here. See, I have this beautiful mug.
Now, Amber, you're a bit of a daredevil. See what I did there? Because you're drinking coffee on the East Coast. It's, you know, it's what? Almost, it's like after 5 o'clock there.
It's been one of those weeks, you know. It's good. You know what? I don't drink alcohol, so it's like my wine or beer, I suppose. You know, you come home and have a glass of wine once in a while. I like to come home and have, you know, a bit of caffeine and then it's just wild time, Sarah.
Yeah. Well, I feel exactly the same way. I'm more of a morning coffee person, but hey, coffee is delicious. People love coffee. So many of us incorporate coffee into our lives once a day or sometimes multiple times a day, sometimes at night. And that's why I want to talk about Tonks. Tonks is a company made up of coffee experts, people who love coffee like you and me, that have a great little service to send us all coffee on a bi-weekly basis, which is bi-monthly. Sorry, I always say that. Bi-monthly basis, twice a month, every couple of weeks. It's actually perfect timing. By the time you need more coffee, they'll send you more. But the great part about what Tonks does is it's not just a coffee delivery service. It's extremely fresh coffee. They roast the beans themselves, and they send those beans to you within 24 hours of roasting, so that by the time you get those beans, they are ready to be ground up, and they are as fresh as can be. You know, there are many times you go to the grocery store, and you think, oh, I'm buying whole beans. They're already ground. They're probably really, really fresh. You see that date stamp? Sometimes they're a week or two old or even more. Coffee does not stay fresh all of that long. It's really, really important that you get good beans that are very fresh. And that's what Tonks is all about. It's really convenient. You don't have to think about going to your local artisan coffee shop and paying full, you know, $5 for some beautiful latte. It's really all about good beans at home. Make it easier on yourself. I'm sort of done with my neighborhood coffee shop, even though they make great coffee. I just can't do that. It's time consuming and I got to walk down the street and it's taking all my money. Tonks is way better solution for me. And I don't want my coffee to get stale, so I want to drink it and then I want to get more. Tonks really cares about the experience of their customers. They've got staff members that are available to help with brewing questions, if you want to know, hey, I need a new coffee grinder, that sort of thing, what should I get? It's all part of the Tonks experience. Maybe you are not sold. You say, you know what, Sarah, Amber, I've just never loved coffee. It's just not for me. Think about Tonks as a gift for a friend or a family member who you know loves coffee. You can guarantee that they'll appreciate it. This is something that everybody would want. Every 2 weeks, they get a new batch of delightful beans, and you get to be the hero. So Tonks is a subscription service, as I mentioned, and they're offering a free sample to all of you. Visit tonks.org/social hour. You get a little sample here. It's, you know, it's a pretty good amount of beans. Looks, yeah, this is going to give you a decent amount of, I don't know, several cups of coffee. A little pack of nice punch comes in a nice little package here. It's great for you or somebody else. And you know, just see how the subscription service works. And we thank Tonks for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Tonks.org/social hour. These beans smell amazing, by the way. They've been sitting on my desk all day, and it's all I can do not to just eat them right out of the bag because that's how good they smell.
You should try that, Sarah.
Yeah. I need to dip them in chocolate first.
I would be all over that.
Or add a little hot water.
I love it. Okay, so we now have our Rad or Fad segment. And this is an interesting one. This is an app. It's called a BRB or Be Right Back. And the idea is it's a notification system that tells your friends or family when you are away. It's called your social away message. That's the concept. And, you know, many times where you're maybe in a meeting or you're gone somewhere for an afternoon and people tweet and email and everything, and you don't have a chance to let them know that you just won't be responding, and that's the reason why this is an app that will allow you to do that. Now, before, Sarah, you decide if it's rad or fad, I just wanted to mention one thing. So other people need to have the app to see what you're saying. So that's a bit of a limitation, I think, for some people. However, you can share this notification on Facebook and Twitter.
This is definitely a trend I am seeing where friends of mine will decide I'm going to leave the internet or Twitter or social media or whatever for this amount of time because I need to unplug and get away from it all. And I think that's a perfectly fine idea. People should do that if they want to. But there has to be some sort of a proclamation, or else people are like, where are you? What's up? We don't hear from you, and it's, you kind of have to let people know that you're doing this rather than just kind of going away. So I like the concept of this, but it seems like it's asking a lot for all of us to download the app just so I can be notified when you decide that you're going to go away for a week.
I mean, I agree with you. It seems like it has to be integrated more closely with some of the social networks that already exist. I just don't see it working as a standalone app because it does seem silly to download an app to tell people that you're not going to be using apps or other social networks. It's a little bit redundant in some ways, right? So I think the idea is kind of rad, but I think as far as your social away message, I think it's a fad right now until they really work it out so it has much better integration and you don't have to download the app. And, it, you know, as much as they integrate with Twitter and Facebook, you can send the message there. You could just do that anyway. You could just tweet out, hey, I'm not going to be answering messages or emails between 12 and 5 today because I have a big meeting or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I don't see why it's compelling to use the BRB app unless, I guess... If this became something where, I don't know, there was a general consensus that it was way better for your health to take a week off once a quarter, you know, or once a month, or, well, 1 week off a month would be a lot. But if it kind of became some sort of a sanity thing where a lot of people were doing this, maybe having the need for an app that just put it into a little bit more of an organizational box would make sense. But right now, I have a friend who recently decided he was going to go off the, not maybe the whole internet, but he was going to stop using Instagram for a month. And his goodbye message was a photo, a kind of a creative photo where he sort of spelled out what he was doing. And that was fine. You know, and it was actually, I liked it. It got a lot of likes. But I think it's more of like a, don't worry anybody. You can let people know that what you're doing. But I'm not sure that this app is the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I almost want a little away icon or something on my Twitter profile, except that people don't necessarily go to profiles that much. But it does. It just seems like something that the execution could be better on this. So I think we're agreeing that it's a bit of a fad, but it could be rad if it was done really well. And I think that something like this is going to happen in our future, because the expectation everywhere, I think, with social media is that you're going to be responsive and always answering and always on. And most people, they just can't. They're not going to be able to maintain that.
Yeah, I love the idea of an away message on Twitter. Yeah, I don't know how you would
be really cool.
Maybe if you, I don't know how you would implement that, because if no one's going to your profile and if they tweet at you, I mean, you certainly don't want to have an autoresponder like at replying, "Hi, I'm away from my Twitter right now. I will be back on Monday the 25th.
What if it like faded out your Twitter handle? Like what if, you know, I mean, like the color or something was faded, indicating that I've notified people that I am away from Twitter for the next 3 hours and you tweet me, but when you tweet me, it comes up in a different color or something like that. I mean, they could execute that like that.
Yeah. I wonder how much the Twitter team has thought about something like this. I'm sure if they're not working on something, it's at least been something that's been floated around and in a meeting somewhere. I like the idea of that. Yeah, because it's sometimes you see, in fact, there was a, I don't even know why I was looking this guy up, but somebody who's a founder of a company that I was interested in, and I looked up his Twitter profile just to see what he had been saying, and it's like, wow, his last tweet was 250 days ago? It's like, okay, but is he on Twitter? Like, maybe he's just a lurker. It doesn't mean that he doesn't use it. It just means that he hasn't tweeted in a while, and so I don't know what that means. So it would be nice to know a little bit more context into, oh, this person is just very active as a reader, not a writer, and so on.
Yeah, almost like a little status update or something that you could see somehow. It would have to be graphically. I think you'd have to see it. So, Sarah, people heard it here first. We come up with Twitter statuses, but we also came up with Skype video filters, which neither one of these exist. But when they happen,
we can say royalties, please, because that was our idea. The BRB app, I agree with you. I think the idea is pretty rad. Boy, would I like to turn off my life for a while, but I don't know how I would ever do that. How would I ever turn off the internet? It is my life. But the implementation of an app in the BRB sense is a fad.
Yes.
I don't think it's going to be the next app for everybody.
Yeah. I think we're agreeing on that one.
All right. Well, with that, we have come to another end of a fun-filled, fantabulous social hour episode. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Reminder, we're live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. I don't even know if we should talk about the idea that we might change the lifetime of the show, Amber. Maybe we'll just wait until we have actually something to talk about. Well, we have kicked around the idea because we know at least, especially on the East Coast, some of you really would like to watch us live. And it's just Friday afternoons, it can be difficult. People, you know, they want to leave work early for the weekends and that sort of thing. So we will let you know as that progresses. But just know that we're also kicking around the idea. So we would like your feedback as well. In the meantime, our website is twit.tv/TSH. Follow us there. Keep up with any links that we talk about in the show. Share them with your friends. Subscribe to the show. All that good stuff. Amber, do you have anything awesome and fabulous coming up in the next week before we do the show again?
You know, I don't. I mean, nothing too exciting. Just kind of homebound for a while and trying to catch up. I've been traveling so much. My email inbox is a disaster, Sarah. I'm sure you know how that feels. Mm-hmm. So I just need to get caught up on some work. And then all of a sudden it will be fall, which is unbelievable. I also wanted to say, though, I think if we are going to use the hashtag social hour, that's a great way between shows if people want to tweet us ideas or things we should include. So we can just use social hour. I know some people had suggested maybe using just TSH, but I think social hour, just we've decided it just kind of is more descriptive and just will get people to identify more closely with the show.
Yeah. TSH is obviously, it's, you know, the end of our website URL, and I think you all know what we mean when we say that, but imagine your friend sees you tweet about something and it says TSH. It's It's sort of an in the know acronym for us. For anybody who's, it's a little bit more of a general, hey, we can all contribute. We thought social hour made more sense. So that's what it is. That's what we're doing.
Love it.
For. All right. Well, Amber, have a wonderful week. I can't wait to see what we all talk about with the hashtag social hour on Twitter and beyond. Until then, we will see you right here next Friday on the social hour. Until then, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon.